Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. It is 9/11, a very special day that we will pay homage to. I'm Karen Curtis again here today with, as we are each Sunday at noon, with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer and Associates PA, a law firm practicing community association law throughout Florida. As our listeners know, we are here each week to answer all of your calls and emails about the issues that make life in your condominium or HOA absolutely crazy from one minute to the next. As always, we would love to get the phone lines going early, answering all of your questions. So give us a call right here in the studio, 877-850-8585. Again, that's 877-850-8585. Or if you prefer to email us your questions, you can do so by visiting the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and by clicking the email the show tab.
And of course, even if you don't want to send us an email, you should still visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com, where you can listen to all of our past shows, sign up for our free seminars, and the next one coming up this Thursday, by the way, we'll talk about that. You can see who the show's sponsors are and visit all of their websites. You can see what legislation we're demanding from our elected officials and which elected officials are in your corner and which aren't. We'll also talk about that today, some good news on that front. And, of course, you can automatically link to our Facebook page and join in our discussions about the show or start your own discussion boards and get feedback from everybody else.
And, by the way, if you have a product or service that would be beneficial to our listeners and want to be a guest on the show, attend our monthly seminars where you'll meet hundreds of different associations and be listed on the show's website and have a commercial spot during each week's show, you can become a sponsor of the show. Just visit the show's website at condocrazeandhoas.com and send us a quick email.
And, of course, if you'd like to call our law firm directly and pick our brains off the air, you can call Glazer & Associates at 954-983-1112. Again, 954-983-1112. And you can visit the law firm's website at condo-laws.com. Again, condo-laws.com. And finally, thank you to so many of you for supporting Camp2012.net and for throwing your support behind our six legislative proposals. And to find out more about how you can get involved and demand long overdue changes to both the condo and HOA statutes, again, visit www.camp2012.net. Again, www.camp2012.net. And I can tell you that our proposed changes are starting to get a lot of attention in the legislature. So everybody, keep your fingers crossed. I think things are going to turn out okay.
Yeah, it's really great. And as we spoke about on the last show, how condo associations can file a joint appeal of every owner's property tax bill. Number two, a new law that allows process servers easier access into condominiums and HOAs. Three, we talked about how the building of new homes was almost completely stopped. And number four, the Florida may be actually unlucky by not getting hit by Hurricane Irene.
Yeah, well, Karen, before we actually kick off today's show and start taking phone calls, you know, I don't have to remind everyone of the importance of today's date on the calendar. Personally, 9/11 will always and forever be one of the worst days of my life, even though I was fortunate enough not to lose any of my own family or friends. Many of our listeners know I grew up in New York for the first 22 years of my life, and I actually worked in the Wall Street area right next to Ground Zero. And, of course, I attended NYU, and I saw the Twin Towers every single day that I either went to school or work and was inside them many, many times. And I think most New Yorkers would agree that the towers weren't just a major landmark, but the single most distinguishing feature of the skyline and what really gave the skyline its character. I got to tell you, even to this day when I'm in New York, it's still hard to believe that the buildings really aren't there anymore.
Right.
It's 10 years later and I look at it and I got to tell you, it's still almost impossible to comprehend, at least for me. But more importantly, it's still unbearable to think about the 3,000 innocent lives that were lost that day. When all these people did that morning was wake up and go to work or simply
right.
take a flight. And while it may be a little bit unusual for a radio show to do, I believe it's only appropriate that before starting today's show, we just have a brief moment of silence in remembrance of everybody who unfortunately lost their life that day. All right, everybody, thank you very much for that. All right, in light of today's significance, we won't just take calls relating to condo or HOA business, but if anybody wants to discuss what this day means to them or wants to let off some steam about the events of that day, or tell us if we learned anything as a country, if we're headed in the right or wrong direction in terms of how we deal with terrorism and the threats of terrorism. You know, hey, we'll be glad to take your calls on these topics as well. Today's obviously kind of a special day. People have a lot on their minds, so anything goes today.
All right. Well, let's start the show by telling everyone all about all the condo and HOA crimes that are taking place in Las Vegas.
Yeah, thank you, Karen. Even though the show was on vacation last week, I found myself reading and studying up on a story about condo and HOA fraud in Las Vegas that is really mind-blowing, and it involves massive fraud and over 100 co-conspirators.
Wow.
Yeah, the Justice Department has been investigating dozens of people at various levels of this scheme, believe it or not, including lawyers, judges, and former police officers. Mm. Now, two people have already pled guilty last week, and about 20 more are expected to plead guilty very shortly. Now, both of the guys who pled guilty in Vegas admitted to participating in a sweeping conspiracy to stack these HOA boards with fake straw buyers, and then they would push these straw buyers to vote for construction defect lawsuits against builders. Now, the legal work and these multi-million dollar repair contracts were then funneled to lawyers and companies associated with the scheme, of course, all at the expense of who? The homeowners who actually lived there. And all of them were obviously deprived of honest elections in their associations as well.
I mean, you know, when you were telling me about this last week, Eric, it really blew my mind. And as you said, the board members friendly to the co-conspirators were straw purchasers in the various HOAs that were elected by the co-conspirators through dirty campaigning that included conducting phony polling, hiring private investigators to dig up dirt on, you know, actual residential candidates, yeah, and actually rigging the balloting, according to recent unsealed federal document. The whole thing just sounds preposterous.
You would think, right? But yeah. Search warrants were being executed at law firms, homeowner association offices, and other businesses in Nevada. Now, get this. The case involves so many high-profile people in Las Vegas that the local U.S. Attorney's Office thought best to remove itself entirely from the case, and instead they're allowing four prosecutors to be flown in from Washington, D.C., to take the lead on the investigation and prosecution. And here's where the story really gets even crazier. The main attorney who was being funneled all of the construction defects, allegedly, she allegedly tried to kill herself twice.
Whoa.
Yeah, with the help of her former boyfriend, who's a former police officer out there in Vegas.
Crazy.
So, 24 people have already flipped, and they're cooperating with prosecutors. And a professor at the University of Nevada who specializes in criminal law was quoted in the papers this week saying that the Homeowners Association investigation is as massive and far-reaching as any case he has ever seen in the state of Nevada.
Wow, this is being labeled as a multi-million dollar conspiracy, but it's hard to believe that a scheme this elaborate is limited solely to one city in the United States. Do we know if the FBI or U.S. Attorney's Office is widening the investigation to include other states?
Good question. I guess let's answer it this way. You know, rigging condo and HOA elections and awarding construction contracts to your buddies isn't something that was suddenly invented in Nevada over the past 2 years. You know, I would guess many of our listeners can chime in with their own stories of similar events at their associations, you know, here in the Sunshine State. And don't forget, of course, we live in the Mecca, where all great Ponzi schemes and conspiracies are hatched. You know, Vegas may have entertainment and food. We got Ponzi schemes. There's no two ways about that. So it wouldn't shock me to eventually see a South Florida connection of some sort. In any event, I really think that this is a major story that Floridians should watch with interest because it may wind up having some sort of an effect on our state as well, if for nothing else other than to serve as a warning to others who have engaged in or are thinking about engaging in this similar behavior. And I can tell you, definitely stay tuned. How about on that note, we take Elizabeth from Boca.
Good morning to all, and on this special day, may God bless America.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth. All agree.
As a board member of an HOA board of directors, the board president, which I am, the board president stated at the end of October that an RFP would be sent out to bid for property managers. The president has refused to give me a copy of the RFP despite my repeated requests. What can I do to obtain this RFP?
Do you know if the request actually went out?
I believe that the meeting was the 26th of October, and he said, if I recall correctly, that we could submit names of companies we wanted the bids to go to for about a week, and then they would go out.
Okay, just so we educate our listeners out there, RFPs, everybody might not know what that is. Requests for proposals is what we're saying. So if those requests for proposals actually went out, they would be official documents of the association, and you would be able to get them by virtue of simply sending a written records request. And if they don't...
And I have, as a board member, I have to do that by certified.
I would do it right, even though you're on a board. Obviously, who would have the records if you don't? Are you saying you're the president now?
No, I am a director on a five-member board. There are four offices.
So the president won't turn them over to you. So I would send it straight to the president, send him a letter, certified mail, return receipt requested, saying you want access to those specific records. Failure to allow you access to those records is going to allow you to go after the association and obtain potential damages against them and reimbursement of your attorney's fees, and is going to be an order requiring them to turn it over.
And that would be both for the RFP and for the list of companies they've sent bids to.
Anything that these are considered official records, if they don't have a separate list that they kept in terms of who they mailed it to, they don't have to create a document that doesn't exist. But they have to give you copies of documents that do exist. Okay?
All right. And, of course, since I don't know what exists, they can say it doesn't exist.
That time will tell. First send the letter out, and let's go from there. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Thank you for the call. All right. Two quick housekeeping matters before we take our first break. Lots of interest and follow-up by many associations here in Florida about how they can file a joint appeal of every unit owner's tax bill. And again, unit owners don't have to challenge the appraised value of their home on their own. And the condo association can challenge the assessments on behalf of every condominium unit owner in the community by the board of directors voting to file a joint appeal and providing at least 20 days for the unit owners to elect in writing that they want to opt out. So if your association, again, finds itself in the position of hearing lots of complaints from unit owners about their property tax bill, the association, again, can challenge the real estate taxes on all the units and all association-owned property. And, of course, we can help.
And Eric, let's remind everybody that these are the type of cases that are typically taking on a contingency fee. So people don't really have to get too worked up about, paying attorney's fees on a pretty complicated issue because typically these are something that we're going to take,
a contingency fee.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But again, strict deadlines to file your appeal. And here they are. Dade and Broward, you only have until September 19th. And Palm Beach, you only have until September 16th. So again, if your association wants to appeal everyone's real estate taxes, give us a call at Glazer & Associates at 954-983-1112, and we will be glad to help. And finally, of course, I just want to tell everybody that I look forward to seeing really so many of our listeners this Thursday night, September 15th, at our Condo Craze Board Member Certification Course at the Hard Rock in Hollywood. Again, it starts at 7 o'clock. We are, again, completely sold out.
Woo-hoo!
But if you want to come, you may still be able to get in by waiting on our standby line. Just please be there a little early, maybe like 6:30. We already have people signed up from over 65 different associations throughout Florida, so it should be a lot of fun.
And if you want to register for our next seminar at the Hard Rock, the next one is November 10th at 7 p.m. So you can register for that seminar by visiting our show's website at Condo Craze and HOAs. And if you want some more information, why don't you just give us a call at the phone number.
All right. Call us again at the office, 954-983-1112. Let's take our first break, and when we get back, we'll take your calls. Again, number is 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Here on 850 WFTL on 9/11, I'm Karen Curtis, and again joined by attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer and Associates. We're taking your phone calls at 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. We go to Jean-Claude from North Miami Beach first.
How are you, Jean?
Hey, Eric, good morning. Good. And it's a sad day today, but it's good also to talk to you. Anyway.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the call.
I got two questions. I'm not going to stay too long on that because I go right to the point. Number one question is, there is a way in the law, condominium law in Florida, that there is a compensation for one of the board member, and board member is also got a license of management, but the person is not managing officially the condo.
Okay. So you want to know whether or not... You want to know whether or not a board member shall serve without compensation on a condominium board?
Does not matter any license they have.
The question is, though, are they also serving as a licensed community association manager, and would they have a separate contract for that? If the answer is no, they're not, then no, you can absolutely cannot receive compensation. Not for simply being a board member. Occasionally what will happen is a board member will wind up becoming a CAM, and that CAM, and then open up a management company. But what the association has to do is vote to hire that management company, and of course that board member should not have any say in that vote. That board member should recuse him or herself from that vote. And it would, again, require that they not only recuse themselves, two-thirds of the other directors would have to vote in favor of that contract.
Okay. So this is the only way that compensation can be done.
The statute says, unless otherwise provided in the bylaws, the members of the board shall serve without compensation. And I can tell you that's few and far between where you actually find bylaws that allow for compensation to the directors.
Now, Jean-Claude, do you actually have a CAM at the building?
There is somebody on the board who got the CAM on the board.
But you don't have a contract with him.
We don't have any contract, and I just want to see the way to go. So if we need to have two bids for managing, or can we accept this person as a managing?
How many units are in your building?
138.
Well, actually, believe it or not, management contracts do not need to be bid out, subject to the... It's one of the exceptions to the rule.
Like lawyers,
right? Mm-hmm. Look how Scott knew that right off the bat, right? But I can tell you again, if you're going to hire that person as the CAM, that person better not have a vote on whether or not they get hired. And the other non-interested board members, you need a two-thirds vote of them to have the contract approved. And even then, the unit owners, by a majority vote, I believe, would be able to cancel that contract at the next unit owner meeting.
Hey, Eric, let me do a plug. There's a number of management companies on our show's website, so if you check those out, maybe that's something you might be interested in
as
well.
We even have Raphael Aquino with us today from Affinity Property Management. Say hello, Raphael.
Hello.
Hello.
He's a natural. The guy's a natural. You know that?
Right.
All right. John, I think you said you had another question.
Yes, a quick question. What are the requirements for private board meeting among the board members?
Very simple. The attorney better be at that meeting, because if the attorney isn't at that meeting, it's not an attorney-client privileged communication. So the attorney better be there, and they better be talking about litigation or the potential for litigation or litigation strategy or something like that. Okay?
And no minutes need to be kept at that meeting,
right.
But anything that results from that meeting, once the subject case is over with and done with and adjudicated, those communications are no longer privileged. But you don't need to keep minutes from those meetings, so
correct.
There'll probably be nothing coming out of them.
Thanks for the call, John.
Thank you
very much.
All right. Have a great day. All right, absolutely amazing article in Rolling Stone magazine last week that cites to a New York Times report that says the Obama administration, as well as all of the attorney generals of all 50 states, they're about to enter into an agreement with the major banks in this country that it would allow the banks to actually walk away with what, again, Rolling Stone magazine is calling a discounted fine from a generation of fraud that led to millions of people losing their home.
This is unbelievable, Eric.
It is. I agree.
According to the article, it's all about protecting the banks from future enforcement action on both the civil and criminal side. And the settlement number currently being thrown around is only $20 billion. And I say only $20 billion because in 2008 alone, the Florida State Pension Fund all by itself lost more than $62 billion, thanks in no small part to the practices committed by these same banks.
It's outrageous.
The article says that what the banks did was most destructive fraud scheme in American history, one that makes the S&L crisis look like a cheap liquor store holdup.
Yeah.
And by the way, this is not just about robo-signing. It's about a lot more illegal activities by the bank, including tax evasion, and more importantly, an international far-reaching theft scheme designed to take subprime loans and disguise them as AAA investments. And the victims were, of course, millions of investors worldwide. And Eric, this is a joke. This is an absolute joke.
Right, $20 billion. I got to tell you, I read this, and the first thing that came to my mind is that, as an attorney, we all tell our clients not to lie, whether it be in an affidavit, in a deposition, on the witness stand, or whatever. we always urge them, tell the truth. And if they don't, you know, and you get caught, we tell them when they're looking at a perjury charge that can wind up sending them to jail for quite some time. But here, on the other hand, we have the banks who have filed tens of thousands of fraudulent affidavits in the courts of our state. They've prolonged the foreclosure process through massive fraud on our state courts. They've caused the citizens of this state millions of dollars in additional court expenses. They harm the state economy to the tune of God knows how many billions of dollars. And have we heard about one perjury charge
No.
against a bank or a bank official for filing tens of thousands of fraudulent documents in our court system? Not one, you know, not a single case. So as lawyers, you know, Scott, I'll throw it out to you. What do we tell our clients now? Do we tell them don't lie in your one single case that you're working on because you may go to jail? But if you lie in 25,000 cases throughout all the courts of the state, that's okay, and don't worry because you have money like a bank, you can buy your way out of a perjury charge? What? I mean, isn't that not exactly what's happening? You know, what type of message does that send if Florida doesn't come forward with one criminal prosecution for perjury despite tens of thousands of false affidavits being filed under oath in our courts and then letting the banks off the hook for money? You know, the banking lobby has always been tough to beat in Tallahassee, but it would be refreshing to actually see some legislators make the bank at least somewhat financially responsible for the incredible damage they've done, and certainly vote in favor of our Camp 2012 proposal to increase what they pay from 1% to 2%.
Yes.
My God, that's the least you can do. Time to take another break. 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. Again, it is 9-11. We are taking your calls on that subject and subject of condos and HOAs. I'm Karen Curtis here again with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer & Associates. Our phone number is 877-850-8585, 877-850-8585. And we'll go to Bill in Boca on the phone.
How are you, Bill?
I'm fine. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
We had an HOA that got elected, and once they got elected, they weren't elected by specific office. They were just elected as a board. Then they announced they were meeting in secret to decide who was going to be the president, the vice president, the treasurer, and the secretary. My question is, after they did that, would the general business of voting for whatever items came up before the board, are those still are those valid votes, or because they met in secret?
Very, very good question. This happens actually all the time, and I don't know how, why, when, or where it started this way, but for some reason, a lot of boards think that right after the election, they can go in some back room and, you know, talk and meet and decide amongst themselves who's going to be the president, vice president, secretary, and treasurer. There's absolutely nothing in Florida law from I'm aware of that would allow for that, and I can't tell you every time we get a new client and we go to their annual meeting how they automatically think that they're entitled to do that. Very clearly, without exception, once that board is elected and becomes the board, there is no such thing as secret meetings any longer, including meetings to decide amongst themselves who is going to be the actual officers of the association. Now, what you can do, at least in the condo setting, is you can vote, you can have a secret ballot to actually decide who's going to be the officers of the association. But there's nothing that would allow for a secret meeting.
It's not
there's
like
a big difference.
Illuminati or something.
Yeah, right. So,
So how would that affect future actions of the board? And in fact, it's an HOA, and they did meet in secret, and it wasn't ballots or anything like that.
Well, remember, they were elected as directors, right? So anything that they do as directors, that's still valid. When they vote on issues, they vote as directors. So anything they do is still valid. It's just a question as to whether or not, you know, the officer appointments are valid. And if I was them, just to make sure you do it the right way, it's something that should be done in front of everyone. Even if they just had a board meeting and said, you know what, we just want to go through the motions again and have the votes again and have the actual voting in front of everybody for president, vice president, secretary, treasurer, etc. That's something they should do in front of everyone. Okay, no such thing as secret at secret balloting and walking away at the night of the annual meeting into a private room and decide amongst yourselves.
Not meeting in a pool somewhere.
Either. Yeah, exactly. Okay, but I hope that answers your question,
Thank you,
Bill.
And earlier we were talking about how banks file fraudulent affidavits and really don't get punished. So despite the harms that the banks have committed throughout the state, I understand that one Florida legislator is trying to help banks foreclose and take back title to units faster than ever.
Yeah, that's right, Karen. House member Kathleen Pasadomo will be filing a bill that she calls the Florida Fair Foreclosure Act. And Scott's going to tell us about it.
Yeah, this bill allows non-judicial foreclosure sales with restrictions. For instance, the mortgage must exceed 120% of the property's value. The house wouldn't be sold at auction, but just revert to the lender. And homeowners could demand a court-supervised sale if they pay the cost of advertising. Under this bill, from start to finish, you can be out of your home in just 25 days.
Yeah, believe it or not. Now, this bill is going to face a lot of opposition, in my humble opinion, because, like I was saying, you know, we catch the banks committing rampant perjury in our courts, and this solution apparently rewards them by allowing them to take your house faster and with less intervention and supervision by the court. Now, I asked Representative Pasadomo to appear on the show here and defend her bill, and she graciously accepted. And she will be here on the show in 2 weeks on September 25th. Yes, I appreciate her doing that. And I also asked her about what she thought of Camp 2012's proposed bill that would make banks pay more to an association when they foreclose and take back title to a property. And she certainly did not seem in favor of it. So, you know, perhaps we have somebody here that, you know, may be a little friendlier to the bank than we would like to see. But we're going to ask her about her bill and our proposals in 2 weeks as well.
You know, this proposal obviously is going to create a lot of feedback from a lot of different areas. You know, that, quite frankly, Eric, it's something that would actually help the majority of our clients as condominium associations to see those properties be back in the hands of paying, you know, unit owner members like banks. But at the same time, you and I are both never in favor of putting too much stock in what the bank's record is
exactly.
on who owns what.
Yeah,
so we don't want to see people getting thrown out of their homes either.
Hey, don't get me wrong. I'll be the first one to say on the show, week in and week out, we talk about a need to speed up the process. And certainly there does need to be a way to speed up the process. You know, removing the court system from the process, I don't think is the way to go. And quite frankly, the banks have lost all credibility in this state as far as I'm concerned. So I still want to see judicial intervention as far as foreclosures go. You know, as far as it seems that the banks, again, are being rewarded at any costs, even if they lie, cheat, and steal. You know, great message we're sending to our kids, right? Money talks, no two ways about it. And by the way, again, not in favor of allowing people to stay in their homes if they're not paying their mortgage or their assessments. I'm in favor of speeding up foreclosures, but not at the expense of having homeowners have less access to courts. That's not the way to go, especially when the banks have shown that they simply can't be trusted. And how about on that note, we go to David in Cooper City.
Hello.
How are you, David?
Yeah, fine. Thank you. I live in an HOA, and my question is, was there a recent change in the law covering homeowners associations regarding board members who have a criminal past as far as being allowed to serve on the board?
Good question. For a long, long, long time, only in condominium associations were felons prohibited from running or serving on the board of directors. And finally, it took a while, but now you cannot be a felon and be on an HOA board.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's some exceptions.
And how do you...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
How do you enforce that? In other words, it's confirmed, or you find out, you confirm that two of your remaining four board members are convicted felons. How do you enforce that?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, since they were never eligible to be on the board to begin with, they're simply not on the board right now. They're off, and I think, you know, rather than you tell them, the association's attorney should write them a letter that says, we understand that you have felony convictions. Here's the proof. You're off the board. You're gone.
Yeah, and if in lieu of that, assuming they hired the association's attorney, and he's probably going to be reluctant to fire his clients, you're probably going to have to hire your own lawyer to see that the statutes are enforced, and you'd have to sue the board.
Okay, that could happen if the attorney doesn't step up to the plate and actually do that.
Wow.
But, yeah, I can tell you they can't be on the board. Bottom line, felony convictions, they're gone.
Now, could you tell me where in the law, because I tried looking that up, and I could not see that. Now, that's a recent addition to the law, isn't
That's
it?
Correct. How about we do this? How about during the break I'll actually look it up, and I'll come back and tell you the statute. Fair enough?
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You got it. Okay. Oh, here we go. You know what? Let's see. A person who's been convicted of a felony in this state is not eligible. We're talking about Florida statute 720.306. Okay? 720. Hope that answers your question. All right. All right. I hope Dave heard that. All right. How about we go to Margo in Miami?
Hi, Margo.
Hi. Hi, Eric.
How are you?
Our bylaws say that an amendment could be made to the bylaws if there's the unanimous agreement of the board and a two-thirds vote of
the owners,
the people that show up at a meeting, plus all the proxy votes. And I know that the Florida statutes say that it has to be two-thirds vote of all the unit owners.
Yeah, I'd have to see it. If your documents say unanimous, it depends upon what your documents say. Your documents would, in fact, prevail here. If the documents say a unanimous board and two-thirds vote of people who appear at a meeting, is that what it says?
Yes, it says exactly that. I've got it right in front of me.
But you'd probably need a quorum of unit owners at that meeting, right, in order to have a valid meeting. So it might be two-thirds of the people who actually show up at a meeting where a quorum is present. That's probably how I'd interpret that.
Okay? Oh, it doesn't mention a quorum in that paragraph.
Yeah, but it's not a valid meeting. It's not a valid meeting of the owners if you don't have a quorum. So that's why I would take the position that you would need a quorum of unit owners in attendance at that meeting.
Oh, okay.
It might make it a little tougher, okay?
Okay.
All right,
thanks for the phone call,
Margo. All right, how about we do this? You got it. How about we take our last break of the hour, taking your calls at 877-850-8585. Again, 877-850-8585. We will be back right after this.
Segment of Condo Craze and HOAs here on 850 WFTL. It is 9/11, and I am Karen Curtis, here again with attorneys Eric Glazer and Scott Shapiro from Glazer and Associates. And we are taking your phone calls about the 9/11 10-year anniversary and about condos and HOA law. 877-850-8585. That's 877-850-8585.
Okay, before we actually went to the last break, we're talking about how the Florida legislators can help us out by passing some of the measures that we're proposing. And I can tell you one legislator who may be stepping up to the plate is State Senator Ellen Bogdanoff. And I spoke with a staff member from her office earlier this week and was told that she's basically in support of five of the six measures actually being proposed by Camp 2012, and that we can look forward to a bill coming out of the House maybe, which will incorporate at least a few of our proposals. And if that's the case, again, the legislator that steps up to the plate and that is willing to take on the banks by making them pay 2%, force people to get educated before being on the board in an HOA, make delinquent owners pay the assessments each month into the court registry, require HOAs to use the same voting procedures that we use in condos, and require some mediation in condo disputes before it gets to court, that legislator is going to certainly get the endorsement of this show and our listeners throughout the state, and it would be very, very well deserved. And
yeah, Eric, that was a bit of a mouthful. So anybody that wants to, you know, go over these proposals in depth, why don't they go out to www.camp2012.net, and they can really, you know, read them and get a feel for what, you know, what we think is what's best for this state and for the associations in general. Mm-hmm. But what I really want to know is, what about Camp 2012's proposal for having HOAs administered by the DBPR?
Yeah.
What does she think about that?
Well, unfortunately, I was told that's kind of a long shot, but we kind of still have our fingers crossed. But if Senator Bogdanoff can get our other provisions passed, she really would deserve a medal, because remember, there wasn't supposed to be any condo or HOA legislation passed this year at all. But because we've been keeping the pressure up, you know, maybe we're going to get lucky, and I certainly look to her for some help. And as I was saying, that support from around the state, all our listeners from around the state, here we go. Rick from Tampa. How are you, Rick? What, Rick there? Rick, is that you?
Yes.
How are you, Rick?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Okay. How can we help?
We've fairly made it pretty good so far through the hurricane season, but I'm wondering what do associations and board members do should they get struck by a hurricane, and with regard to citizens insurance, what kind of course of action do they have?
We mean subsequent to filing a claim?
Right.
Well, you know, the question is whether or not they're going to, citizens are going to treat you fairly in terms of the claim process. A lot of people think, again, before you do anything, maybe you want to go out and get a public adjuster to present that claim on the association's behalf. But again, by doing so, you got to be careful because you may be giving away some of the pie. But I would think, by and large, associations would tell you that have been through this before that a public adjuster is someone that's probably beneficial to work with on behalf of an association, because without one, you're unlikely to get what you're really entitled to.
Well, from what I understand, I think Citizens has changed a law that says that you can't hire a public adjuster until a first offer has been made. And what a first offer is, you know, I don't know what that is, so I was wondering if maybe somebody could clarify that.
Yeah, not sure. I can tell you this. One of our sponsors on the show is Sean Virtue from MacMac Insurance, and I can tell you what I'll do is I'll put the question through to him, and if you hold, we can have our producer take down your email, and I will get you the correct response. How about that?
That's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, public adjusters provide a good service, and I just... if Citizens is limiting the association's ability to hire one, that's going to be a big deal going forward.
Understood. What I'll do, again, I'll give you the correct answer tomorrow morning. Fair enough?
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right, Rick. Thank you. How about we go to Dave from Coconut Creek? Dave, you there?
Hello.
How are you, Dave?
I'm okay. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem. How can we help?
A condo association turned my son down. I wanted him to come live with me. And one of the reasons was because he is a convicted felon.
Okay.
Can they do that just based on a prior conviction?
Interesting question. First thing we got to do is look at your documents and see whether or not the association even has the right to screen, reject, approve, disapprove people that actually live in the associate, you know, live in the condominium. I can tell you often.
Yes,
oh, okay.
They do have the power to approve or disapprove.
Okay. Again, we'd want to see what the actual documents say first, because while they might have the ability to screen or approve certain transfers of units, right, like leases or certain transfer of ownership, they might not be able to approve or disapprove the actual people or family members that get to live in that unit. Okay. So, again, that's something you want to look at first. You got to look at the documents carefully. Sometimes it's in the details. Okay?
All right.
So, no problem. If you want to call us in the office, 954-983-1112. Again, 954-983-1112, and we would be glad to help you with that. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Dave. All right. You know, while some of our legislators have had a hands-off approach to going after the banks, I can tell you the 4th District Court of Appeal, which hears appeals of cases in Broward and Palm Beach County, issued what some lawyers believe is a bombshell ruling this week against the banks in a foreclosure case. And Scott's going to tell us how that court ruled.
All right. I don't know if it was as much of a bombshell as you think, but in the case of Galarum versus LaSalle National Bank, a bank tried to foreclose on a homeowner, and the homeowner's attorney took the deposition of a representative of the plaintiff bank, who signed an affidavit which allegedly showed that the homeowners owed on their mortgage. Now, even though the affidavit signed by the bank's representative claimed that this guy had personal knowledge as to what the owners owed, during the deposition, it was learned that the bank's representative explained that he derived the $340,000 figure that was allegedly owed from the company's computer system. However, he did not know who entered that data into the computer, he didn't know if the facts and the entries were correct at the time they were made, and to make matters worse, to calculate the owner's payment history, he also relied on a third-party data retrieval service called Litton Loan Servicing, who is the prior servicer of the mortgage, and quite frankly, he admitted he had no idea how they did business whatsoever.
Right. Now, despite all this, the trial court entered judgment in favor of the bank. But the homeowners appealed, and the 4th DCA reversed and ruled in favor of the homeowners because the court said that the affidavit that the bank representative signed was obviously not based on personal knowledge that he had, but was based upon knowledge that the other bank personnel had, and therefore was inadmissible hearsay evidence. Now, the truth is banks submit affidavits all day long from bank representatives who claim to have personal knowledge of what the mortgagors owe, and courts issue final summary judgments based upon these affidavits all day long. Now, however, if a bank wants to foreclose in Broward or Palm Beach County, if the owner can prove that the person who signed this bank's affidavit really doesn't have this personal knowledge about how the numbers actually got into the bank's computer, a summary judgment in favor of the bank is going to be next to impossible.
Well, I understand that the court wants to make sure that the facts are accurate before taking away someone's home. Isn't this just going to mean more delays for the court system?
Yeah, I think it will, Karen. I think banks are going to be forced to actually try many of their cases now instead of winning them on summary judgment, especially if the homeowners take the deposition of that person who signed the affidavit on behalf of the bank. And yes, again, this is definitely going to lead to more and more delays.
Hey, Eric, I got a quick question for you. The person that signed that affidavit, did he get in trouble for attesting to something that wasn't true?
Yeah, it did not happen. Again, thousands and thousands of affidavits, not one criminal conviction.
Yeah, but you know,
it looks like we are actually at the end of yet another hour. The show went very, very fast today.
It did.
Thank you, everyone, for calling in with so many of your great questions. Much appreciated. A pleasure to be with you here week in and week out. Try to get through the rest of the day. I know it's a difficult one, and we will see you and hear from you again next week on Condo Craze and HOAs. Ways.